welcome to the Polycast 2015 Christmas special. I am joined, of course, by Dan Q.
We four panelists of Polycast are.
Matt Jim.
Still sleepy, working on a coffee.
Go away.
And Bill.
We'll see.
Also, excuse me outside, this is not winter weather. Could you go back to the cold thing and not the I'm thinking about turning on the air conditioner thing? Thanks.
I still don't have snowshoes either. So.
Yeah, me either. Fine with this.
I'm not fine with that.
I don't know. Snow is acceptable the 24th, 25th, 26th of December, 31st of December, January 1st. Done.
Uh-huh.
Fact.
Nope.
Don't care about the snow part. Care about the could it actually be cold like winter part.
Yeah, and I said fact at the end of the sentence, so that makes it true. That's how the internet works.
So it makes it false. Gotcha.
Yep. See, what you're wishing for is the end of the world. Because if it only snowed for that couple days up north, that means the rest of the world has been boiled off. And effectively, everybody else is dead or moved here.
It can still be cold.
No, the way you did it, no. If it's only going to snow for a couple of days in the middle of winter, at that point, that means the rest of the year it's way too warm. So the deserts have massively expanded because there's just obviously no water. Because if it only snows for 4 days during winter, there's no water in the air. So basically, Dan wants the end of the world. That's what he's wishing
Dan
for.
Dan really wants to get play Fallout, is what you're telling me.
It's the end of the world as you know it.
And I feel fine.
Thank you.
That's the end of Christmas present this year. Mantan went along with one of his song segues.
All right. So apparently we have a mic section, as in there's an open mic and... Apparently, we get to choose who gets to walk up to the mic and talk. And by talk, I mean something that was posted on the forums, or you could have emailed Dan or phoned him and spammed him. I would have preferred lots of Matt's spam, but apparently he hasn't complained enough to let me know that you actually did that, so that was unfortunate. First, the literist. So, he's got three questions. Can we break this apart?
We could do that.
Okay. Can I make an official statement that will once and for all end thought crimes about Civ games needing Total War-style tactical combat? Sure. Officially, I'm going to point out that Total War is a game about real-time action, RPG, open world, blah, blah, blah. Basically, it's real-time movement of units, and that's really what Total War is about, is that one box. I mean, yes, it has got a strategic layer, sort of. It pretends to anyways, where you move stuff around. But Total War game is entirely about the actual army-on-army fighting. They built an entire engine around that. Civ, on the other hand, lives at a slightly higher level of existence. It has a balance of fighting and empire building. It does not need Total War-style tactics because you would need two different engines. Because these things don't work together directly. So please end all concepts of thinking that Total War-style tactical combat needs to exist in Civ. There you go. It won't. Ever. Just saying.
Fact. There we go.
Are you going to do that with every topic today?
Fact. No, I'm just kidding. I won't. I'm kind of tempted now that Mackie suggested that.
That's not how this works. I got one. Let's see. Phantom Axel, 1207. Hey, I actually managed to read the name right. Is there anything that you actually like about an AI leader? No sarcasm.
For the record, that was the first question that was submitted for this special.
I realize it's the first question in the first thread, but actually, does anyone like something about an AI leader without being sarcastic about it?
Yes. No.
Oh, man. We are getting some coal in our stockings, I tell you what. Which may be fine if we're in the industrial age. But yes, let's go for that. Yeah, I need that in my factories.
What? Nobody has anything about the AI leaders that makes them laugh or something? I mean, it's not just Beyond Earth. That's Civ 5, too.
Well, obviously.
Well, actually, the way you phrased it could be the entire Civ franchise. It could go all the way back to Civ 1, for that matter.
Oh, well, if we go back to Civ 1, Connie was nuclear weapons.
It's just, oh, damn.
Yes, it's kind of one of those memes for Civ that even if you don't play Civ, people seem to know about it. Just like if you don't watch Star Trek, a lot of people know about Beam Me Up Scotty. It's just kind of entered that gaming culture. The thing about Gandhi, not Scotty beaming me up, although maybe that too, I don't know. Actually, when it comes to AI leaders, no specific leader, but I am going to cite Civilization Beyond Earth and specifically Rising Tide here because it's the communiques. Leader feels like more like a person. A distinct characteristic within the game that you're playing to differentiate from each other. They like things that sometimes you think they really shouldn't, as we've talked about before. Hey, I'm beating you up, but guess what? Your farming is awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess it's a fine line between love and hate, and that sounds very human, quite honestly. Or, hey, this AI is happy that you're beating up this other AI because they also don't like them. Some things are kind of unusual. You get upset about certain things, but not the fact that I took that artifact on your border, although we did see that in Vanilla Beyond Earth. So I like that. It is a bit more storytelling in the sense that what you're thinking the AI is thinking about you, and if you were trying to write the story of the game, you can actually have the game tell a little bit of the story in the sense of they're doing this, they're telling you this, they're telling you this at a particular point in time. So it gives you more of an emotional connection. It feels like you are actually talking to people, that they have a vested interest in what is going on, and sometimes they will express anger, frustration, excitement, enjoyment. And again, sometimes it is not logical. It's like, really? You're going to do that or you're going to say that just because? You know, I construct a wonder of the world. You like it because it shows how wonderful I use my resources, and you don't like it because you think it was a waste of resources and time.
Make up your mind. Well, that's actually pretty human to be split down the middle about how you feel about something.
And the best part is when in one turn they say, for example, well, I got to use the energy reserves because I find it among the most obnoxious. Energy reserves are really, really low. You stink. So I go from one turn of having like 100 energy, and then the next turn I got 150. Wow, look at how much energy you have. You're awesome. Okay, well, I do have more. Maybe it's more relative to the fact that, I don't know, that you suddenly have none and you had a whole bunch banked the last turn and you spent it or something. I don't know.
Not being Christmassy. Stop it.
I'm not being Christmassy?
Somebody asked about something that he'd like without being sarcastic, and now you're just being rude because you're
what?
Making fun of the AI. You don't like that the AI doesn't know how to differentiate between 100 energy per turn and 150 energy per turn? This is the same old rant you have about the AI and the silliness. Chill, dude.
You're telling me to chill? Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Stick to the question. What do you like?
I do like this.
Excuse me, I'm searching on Amazon to see if I can send you guys both a bottle of chill pills.
I do like it.
No, you don't.
Even when they're being a little obnoxious or being a little ridiculous, it's impressive.
Yeah, I'm dating with the same thing here. Yeah, sometimes it's, you know, it's the game is looking at the variables and from turn to turn it changes and it decides to give you the positive message and the negative message right in a row or gives you positive messages when you're in the middle of a war with them. But the whole sort of quasi-tweets thing that they do, actually, sometimes they're trash-talking you in those and it makes them feel more like they're human because we say those kind of things to each other.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, they can be sarcastic and yes, I am being sarcastic, but I like their sarcasm. And I like how it prompts me to be sarcastic in turn as well. Because it's more likely that I'm going to continue to play that game, even if it looks like I'm not going to win, because I'm just curious what they're going to say next and what they're going to do next.
Sure you are.
I don't think he wants to believe us about anything today, Dan.
No, I don't think so.
No, I just don't believe Dan with respect to that, because we've heard that rant in the exact opposite context previously on a Polycast show.
I like elements of it and dislike it at the same time. So I'm not being sarcastic. I'm being consistent with what I have said. But I also find that it is likable. It doesn't mean that I like everything about it, but on balance, I do like it. It's better than it was otherwise in Civ before now. And what's your answer?
Nope.
His answer is there's nothing he likes about the AI full stop, I think.
It needs improvement.
This is what we have heard from you from many previous Polycast episodes, Imagine. Take this seriously. Oh, my gosh. What the heck?
I'm not being sarcastic. Needs improvement.
Shall we take some pepper with our salt?
Or have some peppermint. It is Christmas.
What's next?
Dan picking a topic, I think.
Yes, this is true. And
wait, that wasn't Dan's topic?
No, that was mine.
Matthew talked through the whole topic. How did Dan get in there?
This is Dan. You know how it happens. You give him just a small little question, and 30 minutes later...
Everyone had the opportunity to provide input, and Mackie also provided an answer. Obviously, someone wasn't listening. From Defiant Mars, hello, Polycast. I know you have discussed this in previous episode, but what features or mechanics are on your wish list for Civilization VI? And on the same note, I was wondering what civilizations you hope to see in a Civilization VI. To answer the first question, not only have we talked about this on previous episodes, but we've talked about it in extensive detail on a topic for a previous episode recording that got archived due to time, and you're going to be able to hear that starting on December 31st with our next Not Just a Lame Clip Show installment. But what civilizations you hope to see in a Civilization VI? I hope to see the civilizations that we saw in Civilization V, so long as they can be as differentiated as they were in Civilization V. I don't want it to just be quantity for quantity's sake. I don't want to return to, I know this is a different civilization because the leader is different and the color palette is different. I want there to be the combinations of unique abilities, unique units, unique buildings, something that sets them apart other than the fact that on this randomization in the game, I'm playing against these half dozen opponents as opposed to these other half dozen opponents.
Yes, that's the problem with the Under-Earth compared to the Civ 5 because they're not different enough. It would be good to have civs where you see, oh, that's this person, therefore I know that they will do this sort of stuff, or they will be a threat because of that sort of stuff, not just, oh, hey, random generated AI number 3. Just mod that. Call it all the AIs random generated AI number. I would like to see some difference, though. I don't want to see the same old civs over and over and over. I mean, yes, I understand certain civs have to be in every single civ game because I've been around and people whine and complain if the core base civs aren't in there, but I would like to see some different stuff. And not different just because, well, I wanted to make it different so this little place that, while it existed through time, didn't actually do crap, but we're going to make it a civ because we needed something different. No, I don't want that.
Yeah, like last time we got Brazil, I wasn't expecting that. But that was cool.
Yeah, I think that's on my list of stuff that shouldn't have been in the game.
Oh, you're no fun.
There was better choices.
Yeah, you're not talking about their abilities. You're talking about that it was Brazil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is for diversity. It's not all European-centric that way.
Oh, well, obviously it needs to be diverse. If it's all European-centric, then yes, it would get really boring really quickly. Or even just the normal main ones. I want something different, though. I don't want it to be the exact same as Civ 5, obviously. I don't like the combinations in Civ 5 made some civs useful within the first 5 turns, Aztecs, but then totally worthless, especially on higher difficulty levels later in the game. I'd rather have things change so that even if you do play the Aztecs, maybe you get your bonus later rather than...
Yeah, you get like
useful
a...
for the first 5 turns sort of useful issue.
Like each era or every other era, you get some upgrade of some sort so that you know, you don't start off with the Aztec Wars and then, well, now I'm in the medieval era and I'm useless.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't want to see that.
I guess you'd have to think about if the Aztecs had gotten to develop up to that era, what would it have looked like and what kind of units or what kind of special building would they have come up with? Something like that.
Yeah, or there could be, like, say, a group of unique abilities per era, and if you tech or do something specific in the previous era, then you would have options on it. That'd be horribly complex, but it would be much more amusing. Say, if everybody's in the classical era, and the medieval era bonus has a pool, and say there's enough for everybody, obviously, the person who goes more commerce-heavy would get a commerce-related bonus when they enter medieval. The person who goes more war-focus would get a war-related bonus when they go into medieval, et cetera, et cetera.
Science person gets a fancy science building.
No, I would never let anybody have anything like that. Science breaks the game.
No, no science then.
Yeah, science bonuses always break the game. It's hard to balance around giving people science when the tech tree is always everything. So you'd have to make it either starting bonuses or, like, very specific, not related to an era that has tech buildings in it or something.
Or just make whatever the science bonus is something that any civilization would be able to access given certain conditions.
Yeah. Like if you have, say, I'm a very big trading-related empire, so maybe they get science from trade. That would make more sense, other than a science-y type building. And then, you know, the war people would get science from war, stuff like that. Spread out the ways of getting science so that it's not just build science buildings, like in Civ 5. Plant 4 cities, mass buy science buildings, plant academies, pop great scientists, and you're done. Don't make it like that, where you just sit in the corner and you can win. Make it so that you actually have to do stuff to get stuff. That'd be what I want. If you just sit in the corner with your 4 cities, you lose the game. That would be revolutionary.
Yeah, it'd be nice to go back to not being penalized so much for expanding past about 4 or 5 cities.
Well, yeah, one would hope that the weird Civ 5 concept of tall versus wide gets tossed out the window, is stomped on, boot kicked, crushed, thrown out, buried, and never sees the light of day again. Yeah, I don't like it. I've never had.
You're looking to rein in some of these extremes, and as you
yeah.
as you describe, not be able to sit in the corner and ignore the rest of the world, the one Civilization title I can think of that really wouldn't let you do that would be Civilization Revolution.
That too.
So I would say a number of Civ players who are just on the computer would look at that as like, oh, that's the Revolution version, or even might say, oh, that was the Facebook version. So they can't have a place in the PC version, and I would hope that people would stop thinking, just dismissing that outright for that purpose.
You know, people wouldn't have even bothered attempting to dismiss it outright had you not tried to tie it to Civ Rev. And I think that your attempt to tie it to Civ Rev so that people would dismiss it is entirely anti-Christmas.
I am trying to point out that, in fact, because it was in a Civilization title, that it was not on the PC, that people would recognize that just because it was the Civ title not on the PC doesn't mean that it, in fact, should be dismissed outright, but reminding them that, hey, this might be new for PC Civ, but it is not new for Civ. Thereby bringing different factions of platforms of Civilization players together, which is in the Christmas spirit.
Sure. Anyways, yes, make people do stuff. You have to do things. That's the point. If you sit in the corner and you're trying to play SimCity, please just go buy SimCity and stop bothering Civ players. That's my Grinch side.
I was about to say, now who's not in the Christmas spirit?
That is Christmas spirit. I called the Grinch. I called the Grinch. That's part of Christmas.
You know, to get back to the original topic, I can't think off the top of my head of specific Civs I want to say that we haven't seen before, because I don't know. I guess I don't know enough about all the Civs that have been on the planet to tell you.
Well, there's that too, but something new, something old, something blue.
As soon as he said blue, I knew where he was going with that.
Mix it up. Maybe make some of the Civs that were not, quote-unquote, totally European-centric and in every Civ game, maybe make those the base game ones and then let the European ones come in later or something. Be totally different. Okay, so it's wrapped around back to me.
It has indeed.
Okay. Yay, so where shall we go? Where shall we go? Where shall we go?
Only Imagine knows.
I'm going to pick on a literist more.
You're going to pick on? Don't you mean you're going to highlight?
Sure, why not? Let's go with that.
Oh, first.
You know he needs pick on.
So the music of Civ 5, 4, 3, and... pause for effect. Polycast. Illiterist actually brought up a thread, which wasn't actually technically part of the Christmas thing, but it has music, so it's close enough. And it mentioned us, so good enough. So the Civ series has great music, Civ 4 has a great soundtrack, he likes it, classical era is meaty for some reason, Civ 5 gets other regional music, I mean, not just Europe. First question, for some reason, music from Civ 4 sounds worse than music from Civ 5. Well, of course, they're both mostly recorded live. But Civ 4 used older recording tech than Civ 5 did. Both are kept in modular audio format. No, not really. So why does the Civ OST sound better? Which is that? Is that subjective feeling? Probably. So that answers that one. Second question. Can anybody tell me why Polycast only uses Civ 4 OST? No. No one can tell you that.
Dan's not sitting right here or anything, and he doesn't edit the show. I mean, he couldn't possibly know why.
No. No one knows how to do why that is. Is there some sort of consensus on what OST is better? I don't know. And to tie that all in before Dan actually answers the question that he needs to answer, does anyone really play Civ 4 long enough to hear the people are the heroes now? I've memorized every song from classical era, and I haven't heard this piece before listening to Polygast. Yes, people who actually play Civ 4 tend to hear that. So now it's Dan's turn.
On the Why Polycast only uses Civ 4 original soundtrack OST. As Stormtrooper 412 pointed out, past guest on this season 9 of the show, we do use in the outro a Civilization 5 theme, the England War theme. And I'll start with that. The reason I switched to that is because Modcast and Polycast before that point had used the same outro theme. It was one of those things to just musically help distinguish the show, because the intro themes were different, so it made sense to me that the outro theme would also be different. It started in Civilization 4, because when Polycast began in 2006, that was the most recent Civ title. It was the title that was being played by most people, and for those of us who were regular panelists, it was music that we were able to identify. Why do we still continue to use Civ 4 sounds? We don't continue to use Civ 4 sounds because they're Civ 4 sounds. It's because that has been the theme for a segment. For example, even though Open Mic used to be called Mailbag, but we changed it to Open Mic, went into the live format, we kept the music the same because the purpose of the segment was still the same. Just like the Senate, we may be talking from Civilization 4 to primarily Civilization 5, and now perhaps most recently Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, but it's still talking about game strategy. The segment itself hasn't changed. So I didn't see the need to quote-unquote update it when there was no reason to quote-unquote update it with a new Civ game. If we came up with a new segment or substantially modified in an existing segment, then maybe that would warrant changing the music that we're using. But I like that continuity, and then I can focus on other efforts in post-production rather than swapping out the music every single time a newer Civ title comes out.
Basically, shows tend not to completely and radically change their theme songs and other things that people will remember if they've heard it more than once constantly. That tends to actually disassociate rather than provide associations, which is the whole point, is to provide musical association between people and the segments. And if you change it, well, that would be bad.
And you could also make the argument that since we stopped in post-production, I mean, we used to have, after the intro, we used to do a summary of what we're going to be talking about, and then we actually used to say the name of the segment before we then started talking about it.
It was creepy.
I dropped that in favor of, let's have a little longer runtime to actually talk about the topic. But then, like Magin was getting at, oh, what's that segment now? You get listening episode after episode, and you hear that prompt. Oh, I know that music. They're going to be talking about something related to what's, you know, a hot issue in the Civ forums. Or they're going to be talking about a news item. Or they're going to be talking about a game strategy. So, again, yes, that you have that continuity and that consistency.
That doesn't mean that it can't be changed eventually.
No.
But
Are we just changing it for changing its sake? And that's what it would be, strictly speaking.
Yeah, it would be.
I need another reason other than there's a new Civ title, and maybe there's a piece of music that I like more. But just because I like it more, what does that have to do with the segment itself? Did the segment change? No. Well, then we're going to keep what it is that we have, because it's working, and it's consistent, and it's associative. That's all.
Yeah, unless Civ 6 comes out with a soundtrack which is just, like, absolutely fantastic, and Dan's like, I must put it all in, you know, we're probably not going to change anytime soon, because we started this podcast back when it was just Civ 4 around.
And if we had started this podcast when Civilization 3 was the latest title, and that's what most...
We wouldn't have started this podcast.
Yeah, that too.
Now, Mackie. Well, we would have had Civ 3 music. Or if the podcast didn't start until after Civilization 5 came out, you'd probably hear a lot more Civ 5 music.
Mm-hmm.
Although I will say, just on the comparison between Civ 4 and Civ 5, Civ 4 got more interesting by adding regional music. Actually, if you went back to Civilization 3, I actually prefer a lot of the music in Civilization 3 as compared to Civilization 5. Maybe not the technical quality, but just the tunes themselves. Now, that's a subjective feeling, absolutely, like he asked embedded in his first question, the literist did. And you can hear that on some other podcasts that we have. For example, Turncast uses a lot of Civ 3 music as compared to any other title, even since Civilization 4, Civilization 5, and now Civilization Beyond Earth.
I've got one. Time Walker 102's question. How would his historical leaders have behaved if they had had a copy of one of the Civilization games? Like, what if you put this in front of Shaka and tell him how to play it, and what does he do? Other than just, you know, do what he does normally and run over everything.
Well, he would probably put a spear through that evil magic box and then try and...
Okay, you're being too realistic, all right? Hypothetically, they did high technology.
They said if they had a copy of one of the Civilization games. He didn't say anything about whether they understood it, whether or not there was a PC there, whether or not you would have to explain.
Dan, you're an actual lawyer. Can you stop him from rules lawyering?
He's not an actual lawyer.
He's actually studied it, unlike you.
Says who?
I was just seeing where this was going.
Anyway, would they have gone? Mackie, come on.
Well, we already agree Shaka would still kill things. Would Napoleon go for a cultural victory or a spaceship victory just to show how superior he is?
I think he would go for conquest, because that's all he really does. And then when he fails to do an in-game, he'd just, like, go kick Germany a little bit. I think Napoleon would play the game, and, you know, if a civ in the game that he was fighting against beat him in a war or something, he would actually get up, go over to that country in real life, bomb them. Wait, why didn't that change things?
Yes, how would historical leaders have behaved if they had a copy of one of the Civilization games? They would use it to play out scenarios and simulate possible outcomes. And then, seeing as how they are a leader in the real world, a political leader in the real world, they would go out and then try to act on that, whereas the rest of us could only hope to do such things.
And then find out that their carefully laid plans fail so horribly because the AI is not a person.
Just about to say, would this be like War Games? The only winning game is not to play.
Except that this time it would be like, hey, the enemy is going to throw all of their troops into the water. Okay, we'll wait for that moment. Let's go. And then they're sitting offshore.
Sitting out there in real life going, jumping in the water.
Jump in the water. The design said you were supposed to jump in the water.
Curtis Arnett says that in our chat, Napoleon would avoid going tall.
I think Kathy would get upset and then come to America and nuke the area. Because Kathy would eventually see all the horse-loving jokes in the game. And if she got the joke, she would probably invade the States before it became a thing. Made sure that it didn't happen.
I have a feeling it's not just the Americas, so therefore everyone would get it. And she's already got the bonus, so hey.
So I'll choose one that was actually specifically directed to me, although I could, of course, will open to everyone else. Yeah, there was one that was specifically addressed to me from New Earth Relic.
Oh,
yeah, you were recently on a podcast roundtable on listener interaction and feedback.
Engagement and feedback, are those different things with your audience? And, you know, we try not to make these how-to, but we're really curious about how each of the people on the roundtable engage their audience or, you know, their experience with their show. And we can learn from that.
New Earth Relic. What did you take away from it? Will you make any changes to Asterix cast based on the podcast? And Asterix, of course, meaning he's talking about Polycast, Turncast, Modcast, Refcast, and Civcast. I said that all in one breath. So the episode the New Earth Relic is referring to is episode 61 on audience engagement on Podcasters Roundtable, podcastersroundtable.com.
We've got, well, if you're watching on video, we have a radio tower, but it's Dan. He's coming in audio only. Thanks, Dan, for joining us on your first roundtable.
Thanks very much for having me, Ray. I'm Dan Quick from the Polycast Civilization series of gaming podcasts and also a dramedy podcast called One More Turn.
Very cool. Multi-shows there. We did a show about adding another podcast to your repertoire because that's what happens. You start one, you tend to think of several other podcasts.
What I took away from it is actually just reinforced a lot of the things that I was already doing.
What does engagement mean to you? I mean, we're just tossing that out there as a general, generic term, audience engagement. But what does that even mean to you? Daniel J. Lewis, welcome back.
Engagement is, I think, one of those things that's hard to measure, but it's the most important metric or measurement of anything with your podcast.
I like it. Dave Jackson, welcome back.
This could go like 8 million different ways.
That's right. Well, that's what we hope for in the roundtable. Scott, welcome to your first roundtable.
Well, thank you very much. Great to be here. I'm Scott Roberts.
Returning roundtabler. Mr. Todd Cochran, welcome back. How many shows do you have?
Two.
All right.
It was interesting to hear how people whose content is completely different from my own
a lot of the things we took away from it was that whatever your topic is, you want to find like-minded people who are interested in what it is that you are saying. Sometimes that means, you know, if you build it, they will come, but at the same time, you don't just want to go ahead and reinvent the wheel.
I think it's not only how much are they coming back for the content episode after episode, staying engaged, but I think a deeper engagement is the interaction, when they start actually responding to content.
A big thing for Polycast and getting the word out there was promoting. Not just promoting the show to say, hey, go listen to it. You know, we're not trying to sell you something. I guess we're trying to sell you your time in the sense that to listen to the show. We don't just want you to listen to the show, all that's a start. We want you to engage conversation. We want you to respond to what it is that we are saying, challenge what it is that we are saying, become part of the conversation, because then you can help influence the direction of the show, which can include up to and including have you come on to the show and be a guest.
Kind of asked for something, and the audience took action.
Right, and if they don't take action, then you don't have an engaged audience.
Dan, how do you, I guess, engage, try to engage your audience, or what does engagement mean for you as far as your show is concerned?
Reflecting a lot of things that have been said already, if you get people to listen the first time, they're trying it, okay, they like it, they turn around and subscribe, it's reactionary, but it's the beginning. Because if you can get someone to listen, then you can get someone to contribute. If you want to get somebody to listen and keep listening, I think you want your audience to feel like you're talking to them and not at them.
Exactly.
You know, after 10 years, more than 200 people have been on this show. They have provided their input on any number of topics that we have discussed. In terms of making changes to the cast, the one change, I was kind of already thinking about it, but was actually starting a Patreon campaign for the show, which you can find over at patreon.com/thepolycast. And one of the reasons I did that was because we had a standing, go ahead and donate to the show. You can make it one time. You can make it recurring. It was always one time. But I thought, why not just be here? Here's some money because of what you have done. Not just that, but we're providing you a little bit of financial gain because I like what you're doing. But you've also said that, hey, if we get to these certain goals, then we're going to achieve this for the show, but also some personal incentives as well. It's another way to be able to contribute instead of or in addition to what you already have been doing, but to also as a means to further what it is that we have already been doing to make it more likely that other people are going to engage and that the same people are going to continue to engage again and again. I mean, I read that and I thought it kind of sounds a bit self-serving in the sense that, well, Dan didn't learn anything except other than to continue what it is that he's doing. But quite honestly, you start to wonder, are there things that other shows are doing that I see them doing, but I don't quite understand why they're doing it? And so this was an opportunity to explain that and to share best practices, so to speak. But I think that the change will be that we're going to continue to listen to feedback, again, tying back to also now the feedback survey that we have for our Polycast running until the 26th of December, so that we get an idea of what people are thinking about the show, what they would like to see changed, what they would like to see removed, what they would like to see added, kind of going back to something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue.
We've already done that once today, Dan.
We can have more than one wedding in a day, Mackie.
Ah, one of those.
If I'm not talking about what the community's talking about, if I'm just pushing all the time what I think is interesting, you know, certainly I can be passionate about that. But if no one else is talking about it, then people aren't going to listen. Or if they are going to listen, they're not going to stick around.
Todd, you said yeah. So what resonated there for you?
Just basically, you got to go where your community's at.
And the fact that we have all of these questions that were submitted specifically for the show, when we called for it specifically, I think is a demonstration of audience engagement. Although the last thing I will say is something that actually came up a few weeks after the podcast had been published, where someone said it's interesting that everyone on this show was defining audience engagement as interaction. But what about just getting the audience members to think? Is that not enough? And I think part of it is, how are you going to measure that? Just because someone thinks about something, what are they thinking about? How are they thinking about it? And how are they acting on it? If you have someone who is engaging, whether it's an email, it's a phone call, it's a forum post, it's coming on the show, it's a combination thereof, they've obviously thought about what it is that you have said or have thought about things that you are going to be discussing or have discussed. And so then in that way, there is that measure of that engagement of people thinking about it and what it is that you're doing.
Okay. Throw a little bomb in there. The grand question. In their fully expanded, patched final form. Blue. Civ 4 or Civ 5? Yo.
We kind of interpret, what does that mean exactly? Which one do we think is better? Which one do we think is worse? Which one have
yeah,
we...
Yeah. No.
No. This is a very simple question. Between the two, in their fully expanded patch form, would you pick Civ 4 or Civ 5?
Yes, they are now both fully expanded. And this is getting disgusting.
Not that kind.
Anyways, which play style do you prefer? Civ 4 or Civ 5?
Civ 5.
I think you guys know my answer. And now that I've played Civ 5 a little bit, I'm still picking Civ 4. But Civ 5 just doesn't hold me the way Civ 4 did. And I like Civ 5 now. It's okay. And it's fun to play here and there. But it's not one of those 2,000-plus hour games for me. So I'm going to have to go with Civ 4.
I'm going to go 5. I mean, I may have put more hours into 4, but I think I've had more enjoyableness out of 5. I mean, part of that's the multiplayer stuff, but still, even playing single player, I enjoy playing a game of Civ 5 more than I did, I think, with Civ 4.
Yeah. I don't know. There's parts of 4 I would rather want back in 5, and parts of 5 I just don't like. So, in their holistic forms, I guess I would skew more to 5. Than 4, but I think that's mostly because Civ 4 wasn't on Steam to begin with, and that there was less multiplayer options. There's certain design aspects that are less interesting in 4, but I would still pick 4 over 5 for some things.
Yeah, that makes it a little hard for me too, because there are some things in Civ 4 I just don't miss at all. But overall, I still
oos,
like more.
Oos.
Well, we got that in both games for a while.
We had it worse in Civ 4.
Yeah. I think Mackie's getting more to how it handles the ooze as opposed to the frequency.
Yeah.
That's like mid-war diplo-vassaling.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, definitely Civ 5 then, now that you've reminded me.
Although the vassal mechanic was fun overall, just that mid-war diplo-vassal was kind of rough.
Yeah. Hell versus White thing, I don't think.
Yeah, that needs to go the way some of the stuff Civ 4 did and not show up again.
Yeah, Hell versus White should never be a thing. So Civ 4 had it better on the expansion side of things.
Social policies versus civics is tough for me, too.
Yeah, I kind of like the civics side of things, being able to pick and choose. But
or switch, because there was strategy to switching. In fact, one of the traits, spiritual, actually made it less costly to do so, whereas otherwise it would be prohibitively costly outside of certain windows. So it's something you had to think about game-long if you're still in the right setting. Whereas with social policies, you're committed, but that committing does force you to plan a bit, too. So
yeah, the thing with civics is they're basically always available once you get to that point. Like, once you get to the point where it actually opens it up, it's always available. So there's no ability to make you choose something and not be able to choose something else. Mutual
sort of. There was a couple things that, depending on how you played, you just did not want to switch out of. Like, if you're running tons of towns in the mid-to-late game, you are in universal suffrage. If you switch out of that, you are hurting yourself tremendously. Same thing with state property and just owning a ton of cities overseas. If you try to switch into something corporations when you have, like, 20-plus overseas cities, you're going to bankrupt in, like, very few turns. So there's some kinds of stuff like that. Plus, they could force you with the UN into the endgame civics if you couldn't handle the unhappiness.
Well, that's part of the thing I didn't necessarily like about the civic side, is that some of them were brutal like that, where one slight shift and the fact that you can be shifted out of it, which I'm not against being able to force somebody to shift out of, but, you know, you can basically break the bank and break the game by shifting out of something. Because you went too far. I think that might be a little, have gone a little
maybe,
far.
Maybe, but in that regard, the Civ 5 theologies has some of that as well, because if you pick something that's getting pressured too much, you run into happiness problems. It's a very similar outcome to being caught in, like, not emancipation, for example.
No, but the thing is, you can flip out of that ideology into the one that's pressuring you.
Yeah, you can do it in Civ 4, too, but...
But no, that's the thing. Your empire isn't going to change between the after you flip. It's basically still the same versus what in your example, mass cottage industry getting kicked out of the one civic, all of a sudden, you're dead.
That wasn't really a threat because that was the end game civic, but like a farm setup, you could get kicked out of slavery. The thing is though, like that wouldn't necessarily be game ending. It would just cripple you significantly. But that's pretty similar to Civ 5. If you've already invested in ideologies and you get switched out, you lost some time there.
Yeah, but you can always pick up the ideology again.
You can change your tile improvements in Civ 4, too, especially with worker stacking, but it still sucks. Yeah. It's the same thing.
I don't know. I mean, on the social policy side, like, ignoring the ideologies, but the actual social policy side,
yeah.
I think it was good that there was options and that they showed up over time, but I think it was bad because the options were all based on a singular area of focus. Other than tradition and liberty, tradition was Gotal, and here's some culture and stuff to let your Gotal. And liberty was, here's some stuff to help you go wide. Honor itself, well, it was all about fighting, but it wasn't really very good, so it wasn't really a good first choice, normally. But then you get piety and the patronage and the science and blah, blah, blah. And the problem came down to, since science is always king, science got its own social policy, so everybody fills out rationalism. I think they were too focused, basically.
Yeah, I think we could have done without the rationalism entirely, just because it became such an obvious choice.
Yeah, but it was also too focused, like commerce. I take the commerce policy. I get all these trade routes and blah, 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 blah. It was a little too focused, I think, because if you don't choose that tree, you completely ignore all commerce-related stuff, and all of it, not just some of it. And there was little reason to only pick a couple here or there. And it was inflexible if you actually made the choice. Some of them are required for victories. Like, you had to go aesthetics if you wanted to go culture victory. So, automatically, you've already locked in at least one entire tree. And once you picked it, even if you wanted to switch victory conditions, you couldn't actually switch out of it because you already paid for it. So, in that case, you've sort of locked yourself in to a victory condition.
Yeah. These each have their merits and problems, for sure.
So, I would prefer being choosable, but maybe not necessarily being quite the same as civics.
I think focusing them less would be a great move to making having more options be viable, too. Is if you look at it, why is tradition the most common pick? Why is rationalism the most common pick? Well, if you spread those bonuses out a little bit, then you can have multiple viable picks rather than just one or two. And that was a problem with Civ 4 civics as well. Like, slavery and caste system were overwhelmingly your strongest early game options. Serfdom was just garbage most of the time, and if you're doing a later era start or something, but you would have to really reach to find a use for something like serfdom, whereas slavery is every single game for Civ 4, just about. Very few exceptions. There are some, but very few. Yeah. And that kind of tuning is very similar to what you see between tradition and honor, if someone's really trying to do well, that is. If you spread out the kinds of bonuses conferred, you can avoid some of that, so I agree with you there.
So Mackie, Phil, and Majin have raised a lot of comparative points for Civilization 4 and Civilization 5. For me, I would prefer the social policies to the civics for Civilization 5 and Civilization 4, respectively. I definitely prefer this what Civilization 4 had, or perhaps better phrased, had not, but Civilization 5 brought with tall versus wide.
That needs to go for Civ 6, definitely.
What about one unit per hex?
I think it's better than Death Sec.
I do too.
Yeah,
I want to see something
between
the two.
I don't miss Death Sec.
I want to see something between the two to cut on the micromanagement. I think one unit per hex would work better if you had more total hexes on the board. There's not enough room. Yeah. You get too much congestion.
Yeah, a little bit more bigger maps. I mean, granted, you're getting newer technology, so bigger maps could be a thing for Civ 6.
Yeah, full-scaled 64-bit program would help quite a bit.
Yeah.
For the next iteration, yes.
Yes. A 64-bit program can soak up more than 2 gigs of RAM, would make bigger maps, and I think that would be nicer as a way to go.
If they can't do it, having some stacking, a capped stacking with risks to doing stacking would be the way to go.
Yeah.
Because then you can move more units at once.
Yeah, minimal stuff. Or at least make it not as painful in some areas.
I don't think 150 on one place is the way to go either.
Yeah. No.
Now, I know we mentioned with regards to multiplayer and the Ooster, the out-of-sync Civ 5 handling it better than Civilization 4, but I did prefer the multiplayer experience in Civilization 4 over Civilization 5. And part of that was just the game's ability to handle number of players.
Oh.
Yeah. And map sizes. Honest to goodness, that was definitely a step backwards.
And you have the permanent alliance thing, so you could have at least more than one person finish the game together. Not to mention, at the end of the game, you could consistently see what the other players are doing, thanks to map trade or any other mechanic for that matter.
Well,
our games in Civ 5 pretty much never get late enough to the point where we're going to get those late games near space race technologies to see the map. So unless you diligently explore all the land, you can't even see what the other players are doing in Civ 5. And beyond that, just the permanent alliance thing would have been really nice.
And even the straight-up team mechanic. Team mechanic in Civ 5, I think, is worse than Civ 4. Only because I don't think that actually changed between 4 and 5, but I think it's because ideologies, as much as they're playing on a team, each of you actually get to pick an ideology, which promptly means that if you choose different ideologies, you basically screwed your teammate for happiness for a while, which is dumb. Same thing for religion. There's stuff in there that, oh, we're working on a team, except that some of the mechanics are not built around allowing team-based play, which
I don't think you
and
have,
again,
it doesn't get enough play compared to not team play.
That's the thing. It's also, and again, winning. You might be on a team, but unless you're playing domination where you've killed everybody else off, you can't win together.
And I think part of that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You don't get a lot of people playing on teams because of the issues with
teams.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, I mean, the mechanics, if they built for it better, you probably would see it more often. Especially if it was part of the strategy in the game to align yourself with somebody over time. That would completely change how the game plays out.
Yeah, the lack of real alliances and stuff like that in Civ 5 was kind of meh.
Yeah.
Related to that, I prefer the diplomacy system in Civilization 4 over Civilization 5.
Yeah.
There was a diplomacy system?
There was.
It's just in Civ 5 you didn't use it as much, so it seems like there actually wasn't one. So, you know, it's an understandable misconception.
In Civ 5 you would do stuff to manipulate the AI to declare on other people or whatever, but in Civ 4 it was significantly more nuanced in how you handled your diplomatic interactions.
Yeah, but Civ 5 was literally just the trade screen.
Yeah, pretty much.
They started with some other stuff, like, ooh, let's go secretly gather our forces towards doing a war, which they eventually got rid of.
No, they didn't actually, like, develop it at all, so yeah.
Yes.
Pact of secrecy? Yes. What does this do?
Absolutely nothing.
Rather than trying to address the problems, let's just remove it altogether, and therefore the problem is, air quote, gone.
Yeah.
They probably felt that they couldn't put in a good system with the amount of time and resources remaining, would be my guess as to why they cut that out after the opening. But
even with the World Congress and that getting added, interaction stuff was never put back into the game in Civ 5. So it was all about the trading.
Although to that end, I did much prefer the World Congress and United Nations mechanic of Civ 5 versus United Nations or... Oh boy, the Apostolic Palace and Civilization 4.
Dan's favorite.
I think the Civ 4 UN was okay. I mean, nobody needs another AP in the Civ game. Or you could have the Apostolic Palace and just get rid of the garbage victory, because the Apostolic Palace otherwise wasn't horrible. The hammers were nice. It was a good thing to pursue, and under some circumstances, not under others. And it could be a real pain in the butt if you are in its religion and didn't align with the person who was controlling it. And those things are all reasonable mechanics. And in fact, they added something to the game. So as long as you get rid of that garbage, like, oh, you took one city of this religion, ah, you lose a vote, game over. As long as you get rid of that, it's not that bad of a wonder.
And I'll also give the nod to Civ 4's espionage system over Civ 5.
Oh yeah,
that was great. Especially winning culture victories with it, but just in general, too.
Yeah, it was nice in Civ 5. You didn't have to worry about, you know, micromanaging your spies on the map. But the information that you could glean from espionage, the time that you would be able to put into it, and those graphs that you would be able to get that information from in terms of the spies, in addition to, you know, the missions that you were able to perform, so much better.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's true. That's one of the few games where, like, some of your demographic information on other players really depended on how effective you were with espionage. And I think Civ 4 did a pretty good job of that.
And also, thanks for telling me about three turns before they finished their building a wonder.
Yeah.
Into their cities, if you had enough espionage, but you did have a really commanding lead for that. But that, the threat of that and the strength from having that, that really added to the espionage system. I have yet to see another game do it better than Civ 4. And I haven't played every strategy game out there, but the way they handled their espionage is really solid.
So I think what we're really saying is that it's pretty close between Civ 4 and Civ 5 for some people, but with a slight nod one way or another.
Yeah.
As much as you have to take in the good, and you think about the good stuff of one or the other, you also have to think of what was bad.
Yeah, it's not a knockout punch for Civ 4 versus Civ 5 or the other way around.
No. I think it's really close because there's a good number of systems in Civ 4 that were just clearly superior than their counterparts in 5, or just mechanical things. But 5 did improve other things in the end.
I think the solution is that Civilization 4 and Civilization 5 need to get together.
Have a baby.
And then they add their two parts together, and that will be Civilization 9, and that will be the last Civ title there will ever be because it will be perfect.
It will implode the universe.
It's hard to do these games perfectly. It's hard to even do them very well.
Yeah, it's the question of, okay, what did get kept? And that's really up to the designers about what they thought was good in the previous one that they wanted to keep, or not necessarily what was good, but knowing what they wanted to change and then going, well, I do have to keep some stuff similar. And how is that actually going to work?
As Paradox Games change perception of the usual Civ 4X formula, those games generally don't have the same divine structure and pacing. They also do not give you the same level of control over your faction and the world in general. Does it make the Civ formula feel overplayed or dated? My answer to the last question is no. It does not. It's a very different kind of game.
Also,
I would say that Paradox Games are not 4X.
Yes. I agree with that statement fully. That was the first thing I want to say. Paradox Games do not make 4X titles. I mean, technically, there are a couple games in their stuff, but it's not the Paradox stuff. Like, it's the publishing of other people's stuff. And when people say Paradox Games, we think the CK series, the EU series, the Hoi series, the yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
That concept, which they don't even call 4X.
It's not.
Well, you can try to X, but then they nerf it.
Yeah.
But there's always ways around.
It's a different style, a strategy game. I'll at least let it be called a strategy game, but I wouldn't necessarily call it too much.
It'll fit in that broad.
Yeah, it fits in the broad thing.
Just like StarCraft does. I mean, StarCraft, Civ, and Paradox titles, like, you would not mistake one for the other in terms of gameplay or even what it takes to be a good player at one, but they're all strategy.
Yes, they'll require some strategy, or the big S strategy game, not the little S. So, have they changed perception? No.
I disagree. You know, I think we are seeing evidence of some of that stuff finding its way into Civ, especially with Beyond Earth, their war score crud. It's an example of something that you really need to look at the differences between the series when bringing one concept across. Because War Score in the Civ series in a 4X title absolutely has to function differently than it does in a game like Paradox titles, like Grand Strategy. But it's not a bad concept in that you can force terms with otherwise you have players being stubborn. But we are seeing some concepts brought across. I think the tall versus wide cancer has found its way into the grand strategy titles a little bit, and I don't think they're better for it. But it's there. They're certainly taking some inspiration from each other, so it's worth a look.
Yeah, well, it's just the question is, may change perception of the usual formula. But, I mean, that's just a generalized thing of companies look at each other's games. I mean, as long as they're in the same genre and the same market, basically, they'll look at each other's games and see what they've done with different things and go, well, that's cool, that works. We can incorporate that. That's pretty common. Even the quote-unquote usual Civ 4X formula has changed over the years since Civ 1.
Oh, yeah, quite a bit.
It's been modified, and it's modified other stuff.
Yeah, I'm about dated when it changes every 5 years, a lot.
The evolution of the Civ 4X formula, yes, that exists. But I don't think Paradox is that really change the perception of that 4X formula. Like, yes, they make a different type of game. Is theirs better? No. Actually, it's generally worse, unless you like specifically that. You know, some people prefer the 4X. Some people prefer the RTS. So, because RTS and 4X can't be also directly compared that way either, because they're different ways of playing.
And the skill sets are night and day different.
Yeah.
I don't think you can bring out an Excel spreadsheet during a StarCraft match.
You can, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, not to benefit from it. Yeah, nothing stopping you.
That would just be amusing. And then take a pic of it, especially if you won.
I'll do it while streaming so that other people can see how badly you're beating somebody that you can tab to another program and, like, look at Excel while still beating them.
Yeah. Anyways, is the Civ formula feeling overplayed or dated? Hells no. And keep in mind that when you say Civ 4X formula, what you really mean is saying that the Civ, Mom, and Moo Holy Trinity is overplayed or outdated. And my answer to that is no, never will be. It will always exist. That trinity of fantasy, space, and historical 4X games will continue to exist over time. Still evolve, but...
Yeah, if we were still running, like, Civ 3 mechanics, I would say yes, but that's not the case, so I say no.
Yeah, it is true. We got past Civ 3.
By the end of 3, the whole worker-settler pump thing, just spamming cities out nonstop to no real penalty, that was getting a little stale towards the end of its life cycle.
Yeah, well...
And I was a kid for a good chunk of that, but even so, that was getting stale.
But that's the thing, there's also the fantasy 4Xs and the space 4Xs that picked up the slack along the way. There are lots of different types of strategy games that fit their niches that still fall under the word strategy. Big S strategy, not little S. One's not going to push the other out. I mean, as much as some people want everything to switch over to RTS style, no. There are games that make great RTS games, and they're great, like StarCraft, and maybe a couple others, like old school Warlords.
Yes.
For at least Warcraft before the WoW edition. And then there are games that make better 4X games.
Kamikaze, what are you expecting or hoping for in the year to come?
I am hoping against hope, that Civ 6 will not be announced in the next year. I'm hoping that it will not be announced till 2017. Why?
So they will work on BE more?
No. Mostly because there is a constant horrible spam out there, quote, or just make crap up going, Civ 6 has to be released in summer of blah year, or it will be released in spring of blah year. And this spam has been getting more and more and more. And it's horrible because it's based on absolutely nothing other than them needing to write a story so that at some point they will eventually be correct and be able to point to that going, haha, I predicted it. Even though they have a pile of dead articles before that where they were completely and utterly wrong. So I want Civ 6 to not be done until 2017, or at least announced until 2017, just to annoy all of these people.
I don't care about that.
They are annoying me. They are annoying me.
When it comes to Civ 6, I want to see it not come out in the state that 4 and 5 were. That's what I want to see. And so, of course, that means I don't want to see it next year. But aside from that, I would like to see Beyond Earth continue to get some development since it's been released already. At least in the Civ franchise, that's about it for the moment.
I don't know. Other than the joking around about that, yeah, I would hope that if Civ 6 was to exist, and if it was to be get released...
Take your time.
Make it work. It might not be fully fleshed out on all the mechanics that you might want, but at least...
The ones that are
stuff,
in there?
Yeah, the stuff
work.
You put
in
must work. None of this, well, we kind of ran out of time, so we never actually did that. We'll patch it later. Crap.
No.
Screw that.
Yeah.
Welcome to the old new world, where you had to actually try and make it right the first time. Otherwise, we'll tell people. And then you won't get sales.
We're going to tell on you.
We're going to ruin your business because you put out a shitty product. That's not a threat. That's just a statement.
I thought you were going to say that's a promise.
That too.
What am I expecting or hoping for in the year to come? Well, I hope my golf game continues to improve. Oh, you mean Civ. Oh, okay.
Or...
Well...
Well, I think more ish on Dan is also a crucial facet of the upcoming year.
Far more ish.
Yeah.
I am hoping for success for Civilization Online, although I expect it to falter as it tries to find its footing. Similar to Phil, I hope that Civilization Beyond Earth will continue to get treatment that Civilization V experienced. Maybe not too up to and including a second expansion pack, because not necessarily more is better, but a further refinement of what we've already seen. Just kind of a continuation of patch, flesh things out. In other words, have it realized to deliver on what it has promised and what its mechanics are and purported to be and wanting to be.
Or just take it out behind the head and shoot it.
Although related to taking it outside and shooting it, Jay, can you stop releasing more Civilization Revolution 2 titles that is just a rehash? It's just, okay, now we're going to put it on this console, and we've put a new coat of paint on it, and it's a new Civ Rev. Okay, no, it is not. Just stop with that.
Hey, expecting or hoping, it didn't say not wanting.
Now, I'm hoping they're going to stop doing that, but I expect them to continue to do so, because it obviously must be profitable, because it continues to happen.
I'm going to go with Dana, hoping that Steve Bird is getting a good amount of love, getting the patches in, tweaking things, and maybe we get to find out what Ernie is, you know, second expansion. And maybe we hear news about Civ 6, but not necessarily for release next year, but at least that, hey, we're doing it officially.
I hear Mackie's populous. I have a stapler.
No. Stay away from my citizens' nerves.
They won't know any better. It's okay.
No, it's not.
Anyways, I do expect something new to be announced from Firaxis.
Something of some sort?
Here. I don't take XCOM 2 being released in February as the 2016 release of Firaxis, or at least an acknowledgement. So it will either be more Beyond Earth or Civ 6, finally, or some other thing that Firaxis is working on, because apparently Sid loves to putter around and, you know, make random games and toss it out there. So I'm sure there will be something, at least one, possibly two, or none.
Well, and actually to that end, I think we've covered this in part, what Celljaded had asked about. I think Beyond Earth will ever reach its full potential. I so desperately want to believe that Beyond Earth will one day have awesome wonders, balanced virtues, and a longer, more satisfying endgame, but I worry that once Civ 6 appears on the horizon, that the game will be abandoned as that side project misfire that no longer gets officially supported. I don't think that would happen if a Civilization 6 was announced because it's being worked on, and then Civilization Beyond Earth goes by the wayside.
Yeah.
One, we've seen Firaxis continue to work on Civilization 5 even after Civilization Beyond Earth was announced and released. Heck, we even saw a patch for Civilization 4, and I'm not talking about the one that got rid of issues with multiplayer. No, I'm talking about the very last patch that said, hey, you no longer worry about having the CD in the drive. That was years after the game was fait accompli. It didn't really change much of anything else.
Yeah, they nerfed protective.
But at the same time, Firaxis has said, co-lead developers of Civilization Beyond Earth and Rising Tide, its expansion, have said, we want this to be another Civ franchise. Unless they've decided to completely change track on that, I think it's completely conceivable to see that if a Civilization 6 is announced, that not only will Civilization Beyond Earth continue to be worked on, but they're also probably going to start thinking out of Beyond Earth 2. Or Civ Verney, or both.
Also, that it's two different teams that worked on it, for Civ 5 versus BERT. It's not like, oh, they're going to start working on Civ 6, and therefore everybody gets tossed off the BERT team to go work on Civ 6. No. Do we think Firaxis has the motivation and aptitude to make Beyond Earth a great title? Yes, but I don't think the people at Firaxis who are working on it are those people. Just to clarify.
Just to allude to some other questions, phrase without being specific, pointing the fingers at one or two particular people as being the source of all ills is misguided. Certainly, there is a buck stops here, but it's a team of people.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 441-21-288-7659. That's 441-21-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
I would rather they focus on making a solid game that generates more fans and generates more people to want to play the game versus doing the opposite, which is what most publishers have been doing lately, which is just making gruel for the masses and just hoping to spread it around enough that they can recoup some of the silly costs.
Game that everybody wants to play, and the people would look at everybody being the masses because we're trying to make money, and therefore we would rather have 1,000 people buy it and then maybe only 500 of them play it, as opposed to getting 500 people to buy it and those 500 people playing it.
Well, yes, but the point is to make a good game, and then those 1,000 and plus people will talk up your game, as in talk to 10 other people that they know, and then maybe 10,000 people will buy your game because people have played the game and said, look, this is an awesome game, versus, hey, look, this is a heavily overly marketed game that apparently we've been told is so awesome, I should go buy it. What the hell is this crap? Never mind.
Yeah, you want whatever mechanics you have in the game work as intended.
What is that?
As yes, which might mean sometimes less is in fact more. That trying to please everybody, you're going to end up pleasing nobody, or at least annoying everybody to comparable degrees. And then what everyone can agree on is that there's something about your title that they don't like. Not liking something because it's buggy, as compared to not liking this because this mechanic isn't the way that they feel that it should be, are two notably different things. And also, for some reason, the way you were describing it, imagine, I thought you were about to go into a pyramid scheme. I don't know why. You know, we get 1,000 people, then you get another 10 people, and they tell another 10 people.
Yes, that's the word of mouth. Because of Twitter and stuff, one person says something, who knows, could be 1,000 people. We also tell 1,000 people. You never know.
Just make sure you're at the top of the pyramid. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you for joining us on this Polycast Christmas Special 2015. I'm your regular co-host, The Mean Team, season's greetings, and I was joined as usual by Dan Q.
1, 2, 3, friend or ally, I give you red and green. Acquaintance, I give you white. Adversary or enemy, I give you black and blue.
Makalua.
So Dan's gift for everyone this season is to beat you up. Okay then, happy holidays.
Imagine.
Dan gone crazy. That's his Christmas gift to us. Otherwise, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, blah, 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 for all the rest. Bye.
Merry Christmas and ish to all.
Starts with an earthquake.
Earth is like an airplane.
Oh, not thinking of a Red Hot Chili Peppers song, but let's not sing that song at all.
And we were still on the same song, Dan.
Seriously, we were still on REM. You went to Red Hot Chili Peppers? What is this?
Dan doesn't know all the references to a song. All he knows is the pop culture version of it.
It's the 2015 Polycast Christmas Special. That's what this is, obviously.
Obviously. I'm just going to go over here and be quiet and snicker, because...
Wait, how is that different from usual?
I don't know. Thank you. I.e. CFC forum or 2K forum or some of those...
And there's first edit, but...
Well, let's go to first... Let's see. I get to choose. I'm still looking.
Really? I couldn't tell you were still looking. It was just a completely natural segue.
He's looking for his topics in all the wrong places.
I am.
So, Phil, we want to choose the next.
Fat Phil. Aw,
Phil.
Welcome to Politicast.
I had to provide an example.
That was completely random, right?
Oh.
Completely hypothetical.
He just happened to pick an American city and a Canadian city for that.
Wow.
Wow, Mac.
Was that keyboard of death, Mac?
And that was the keyboard of death. I was like, Imran.
There was a question out of the chat. Why didn't the Shaka's War theme play when you introduced Phil?
Phil's ego needs no such as any of ours, for that matter. So we're not going to have fanfare, dedicated fanfare to each of us. That just sounds like a really dangerous precedent.
It does. Because Dan would want his to be music that you can sing to, and he would change it constantly. It would get rough.
Speaking of getting rough, next.
Becky.
I don't know.
Not
no. No, no, no. No, 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 no. Rewind.
Yes. Just win. Rewind. How would the story?
Mackie did this to herself.
Mackie, take the word have, put it after leaders.
Yes. It made sense when I read it, and then I tried to read it out loud. I totally messed up. I'm making the face.
Which one? There are several in the Mackie handbook.
The glaring one. The really one.
Oh, the number one. Oh.
She's doing a number two.
See, now I'm still making the same face. Because you've done it again.
You said it. You said you were doing a number two.
Ay.
Dan, I guess it's back to you. Since there's still no Phil. Phil.
Yeah.
Phil's abandoned us. Oh, what's going
there
on?
There he is.
Wait,
he's
what?
He's feeling somewhat less terrible and awake, but you were too deep in for him to want to join.
Oh, no, no, no.
No, 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 no. You get your butt in here. You can type that, by the way.
I'm still getting my bearings. It's probably better to pass over me for the moment here.
But we did for like an hour.
We passed over for an hour. It's your turn.
I doubt there's anything to add to that. By the silence, it's like, Dan, that was a great answer. 100%. So awesome. I wish I could answer questions like you. Well, you can't because I'm me. Of course, the X-Tom. X-Tom. I don't know what that is.
X-Tom.
So, Phil, was there something about what we talked about before that you wanted to touch back upon?
I was having a little bit of trouble going through it, and I don't think that's necessary.
Well, I'm not saying it's necessary, but do you want to? You know, do you want to... Oh, Phil's giving me a Christmas gift of not having quite as much post-production. Yay! Oh, Phil, you shouldn't have.
Hey, it's a good gift. Don't knock it.
Oh, I won't. Just don't make a habit of it, then I wonder who the hell you are.
Well, yeah. What episode number is this?
Christmas.
We usually have it.
It's not an episode.
It's not.
Number.
It's a Christmas special, Philly.
Okay. Well, I thought that that counted as an episode number all the same, but...
Christmas
special. All right. Here we go.
Record date, December 12th, 2015. Clip credits in order of appearance. Christmas Wrap by Kevin MacLeod. Podcasters Roundtable, courtesy Ray Ortega. The First Noel, DJ Shaw remix by Sarah McLaughlin, courtesy Vancouver Sun. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.